Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. That's what you got to do. You hit me up on that text line, and I'll react accordingly, respond accordingly. Coming up on the program, Terry Waters. He is the Republican nominee. I believe he does have a Democrat opponent. For Senate District 22... That's Northern Baldwin County, Escambia County. It's Greg Allbritton's current district. I believe it gets parts of Washington County too, and maybe a little bit of Clark County. Kind of an oddball drawn district, but such as it is, we'll have Terry Waters on. First time on the program, and I believe he's coming by the Fairhope Bureau, so we'll hear from him in about 30 minutes or so. So stick around for that. Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery will make time for us in the 10 o'clock hour. And Alan Mendenhall of the Heritage Foundation writes a column for us at 1819 News. It's about Republican turnout. And just in general, I think, apathy. I don't think this is just an Alabama thing, but there is sort of a rubber stamp mentality. Hey, you win a Republican primary, good enough for me. But we'll talk about that coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. A few things. We'll start with the Barrymore comments, and I immediately saw it, and I thought he is just grooving a pitch right down the middle. Another baseball metaphor for you, for Donald Trump to take some kind of interest, some kind of ownership in this bridge. I gotta be honest, I don't think it's a bad idea. But I think they got to get Kay Ivey and John Cooper out of the way. They have got to take those two out of the equation. The people who are the sort of senior elders of Alabama politics, which would be Barry Moore, Tommy Tuberville, Katie Britt, and Jerry Carl, or whoever else, they got to figure out a way to extricate Kay Ivey and John Cooper, because everything they touch regarding this bridge is just a disaster. Kay Ivey will try to figure out a way to get Donald Trump to pay for the West Alabama corridor. I don't know. I have no confidence in the current administration. Nobody wants to fight them because they're lame duck. I don't understand that either. Like, what are you going to lose taking these people on? But there's no reason for to do anything, secure federal money, whatever, until they're out of the way. It's just bad news bears. Sorry to be such a downer on that, but I think Barry Moore, what he's doing here is, I don't know if it has a dollar sign to it, but it's not a bad idea to get Donald Trump interested in this. I think what John Cornyn tried to do it, but it was not for the sake of funding. It was for the sake of his own election in Texas, an expressway near Dallas. But I would get this story needs a little national coverage to get his attention, maybe. But it's not a bad idea. I was joking in the last segment, if y'all weren't listening. Imagine being one of our friends with the diagnosed TDS phenomenon. and refusing to drive across the Donald Trump Bridge. And I'm gonna opt for the George Wallace Tunnel. William Bankhead Tunnel. You don't think that he wasn't a segregationist? The Cochrane Bridge. I guess you go all the way to Africa Town and Cochrane Bridge and go across over there. There will be people who, with no historical context, will opt to take an alternate route, but they will not drive over something called the Donald Trump Bridge, I guarantee you. Maybe that dies down. Dale Jackson and I were talking about this yesterday. 20 years from now, oh, that Donald Trump, he wasn't that bad after all. Whoever the next Republican is. Sorry, there's a on ESPN right now, the award-winning First Take program, and multiple brawls broke out at a joint practice with the Saints and the Cowboys. What kind of bad idea was that? There's your sports ball moment of the first segment. Let's keep rolling here. Last night in Florida, kind of mixed bag results. But the DSA, you know, Democrat establishment types are, I guess, very pleased with David Jolly, a former Republican, winning the gubernatorial primary, a statewide election. But investigate. Think about this. Some of these congressional races, the DSA candidate were emerged victorious. So you're going to hear a lot about Angie Nixon, the Senate nominee, beating Alex Vindman. Ashley Moody's going to win that race. But you're going to hear a lot about her, and I suppose Republicans are going to try to tag Angie Nixon is the face of the Democratic Party, or at least you'll see that on Fox News, probably. But let's, I was telling the guys in the last hour this, that, you know, you have these candidates who win these races, and, you know, they may take a loss in the gubernatorial primary, but getting a win, DSA is a new phenomenon. They will view these victories as a step forward. They won't shoulder the losses in the same way because they're an upstart. Sort of like guerrilla warfare. They're popping up. They're picking off a seat or two here and there. They're winning some races. And that's sort of how these movements kind of get momentum. Now, is this just going to be another like Tea Party sort of thing where it comes and then it emerges later on in our politics down the road as something different? Sort of like the Tea Party kind of morphed into the whole MAGA movement with Donald Trump. The energy is not going to go away. It's not going to dissipate. It'll, and then what will that be? Like a Mark Cuban presidency or something? I don't know. But that's sort of the play here, I think. And Democrats are having their civil war, but they're going to have to. The Democrats are going to have to start conceding these ideas, these socialist ideas, that are going to make it very difficult for them to win. But, you know, yes, if you're just looking at the scoreboard, Florida was a mixed bag. But it's sort of like, I don't know, Georgia Southern playing Alabama and being in the ball game. Because that's how they're going to view it. Like, you're going to be excited about something. We're putting points on the board. We're showing that we're competitive. against this juggernaut, this, you know, $1 million of resources and all the so-called smart people that we're moving some things and we're making things pop and work. But I think that's, as far as that goes, last night, this is a step in the right direction, step in the wrong direction for the country, but a step in the right direction for the DSA. They said they're not just a Green Party or a Reform Party. They're putting points on the scoreboard, and they may not win the game, but they may win another game later on down the road. The Democrats, they don't really have an answer for that. Because it's this. You got to have more James Carville types speaking out against it. But that's almost like a suicide mission for some Democrats in some precincts, because you rely on those people to be your base, the people who vote. But this is like what John Boehner had to deal with when he became Speaker in 2011. Remember that? Remember when John, well, it was 2011, it was 2013. And remember how that worked? Or no, it was 2011. But like they were going to read the Constitution or that they were going to do all these things. It was going to be different. Things were going to be better. We're going to look at the Constitution and examine things from that perspective. And that's the kind of That's the kind of approach we're going to take with our politics, with our policy. It lasted for like a month. And then it goes back to what it was. And I'm telling you, the difference here is I just think some of these Democrat socialists are, I mean, it's an ideology that's like very, very radical. It's almost revolutionary. I'm not going to like go down the path to say they're going to get violent, but they're not going to back down. In the end, they'll have to make concessions. It'll probably be something like you see today, 10, 15 years from now, where you have like a Jim Jordan chairing the House Judiciary Committee or whatever. They'll have to coexist. They'll have to form a coalition with these people when they're in power. And Republicans have kind of managed that. It took them a while. Democrats are going to figure that out. And I don't know. You know, they have moved their primaries, their presidential primaries around that I believe without having sort of this bulwark New Hampshire, Iowa thing there at the very beginning, that they're going to end up ultimately more radical presidential candidates leading the horse race very early on. And that's going to be problematic for those guys. But that's a, this is going to be years in the making, I'm telling you. What else happened yesterday? The Alaska, there's two Dan Sullivans, and the weird Dan Sullivan got into the mix. Wyoming, the Trump-endorsed candidate, lost. I don't know what to make of that. Anyway, more on that throughout the program. 251-343-0106. We'll return. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Ben's ears down flat long before you take this cowboy's hat. Now, if your leather jacket means to you what this hat means to me, then I get...
Promise me, son, not to do the things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can. Now, it won't mean you're weak if you turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us. On this Wednesday morning. Text line would be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. Still to come on the program here in about an hour. We'll talk to Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll hear from Alan Mendenhall. He is a fellow at the Heritage Foundation, but he also writes a column for us at 1819 News. And we're just going to talk about, the column was kind of interesting that came across my radar about voter apathy on the Republican side, and we'll get into that. So make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now here at the Fairhope Bureau, we're going to get a quick segment in. We'll do a much longer, lengthier one in the next segment. But Terry Waters, he is a Republican nominee in the 22nd Senate District here in Alabama. Terry, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it. Love your show.
Hey, thank you for coming out and coming by. Well, unexpectedly, I would say, probably to a lot of people, you won a Republican nomination. You knocked off Greg Allbritton, who's been there for a while. But I guess we just need to get to know you and tell us a little bit about yourself. What got you into politics and interested in especially Alabama state politics?
Well, it's definitely something that was not planned. I grew up on a farm in Robertsdale, graduated from Robertsdale High School, went into the military 25 days after high school, actually got married in high school, had a daughter in high school. Very, very proud, married 39 years last Friday. So I had a lot of family support. I never had a plan of going into politics. I was asked, it was comical at first. I started asking around and who is your state senator? And most people didn't know. And I saw a need, that we wasn't really represented the way I thought we should be. Last minute qualified last minute, threw my name in the hat and here I am. Lot to that story, but here I am.
Well, and so you're from Robertsdale.
Yes, sir.
What's sort of your, I don't know, your resume? What do you do for a living?
Okay, so we farm. My family farms. I have two brothers, Timmy and Tony Waters. My dad, Donnie Waters, and we farm, and we have a nursery, and we started our nursery back in about 98. My son was groomed, Justin Waters, and he has taken over the nursery, and it actually gave me too much time on my hands where I thought I could do this, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. It's
the busiest part-time job I've ever had.
Well, welcome to Alabama politics. Right. So, any expectations? I mean, you got a Democratic opponent.
I do.
I'm not going to pretend that that's competitive, but, let's say you are elected in November. What are you kind of looking at here? What do you think?
Well, I'm going in very open-minded. I think that's the best way for me to go in. I don't have big expectations. I'm definitely want to be a voice for the people, I didn't know when I got into this. So I'd like to say, House representatives, for sake of math, represent about 50,000 people. I think a lot of people don't understand that, and so state Senate about 150,000 people. And on the way over, I heard you talking. This district is all of Escambia, say Foley North, Baldwin, a little piece of Mobile. It was about 10% of the voting block, if that helps, and all of Washington County. So roughly 150,000 people. And, we were talking about, I should get elected in November, and I should, but, it's scary. We're looking at these statewide races. There's a lot of people against Tupperville, which I don't agree with. We're Republicans. We need to stand behind our candidate. A vote against Tupperville is a vote for Doug Jones, and I'm not there. So I hope that we can unite as Republicans and get behind Tupperville.
I suspect that we will.
I do, too.
Yeah,
Democrats are very good at it, though, and the down-ticket ballot scares me.
Well, and, it's you're blessed with a very red district,
yes,
though.
Yes, that's right.
And I just it's hard for me to see that playing out that way. They're going to try and just try to and this is sort of me freelancing here, but I think they're just right now, the stuff you're seeing with the Florida stuff or whatever, it's just try to dirty the picture for Tupperville when he does get into office.
That's right.
But we'll pick that discussion up on the other side. Let's get a quick timeout in here. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Underneath the mountain moonlight, hold her up tight. Make a little loving, a little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life, oh, so right. My Dixieland delight.
much more than this. I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show with FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. I promise to get to your text in due time, so please stick around for that. Also, still to come on the program, as we mentioned earlier, Joey Clark in about an hour, and in a couple hours, we'll talk to Alan Mendenhall from Heritage. So stick around for that as well. Still with us here, he is the Republican nominee in the 22nd Senate District, SD-22. But Terry Waters sitting in with us this morning. Terry, let's get into it. Legislative priorities. I mean, have you given this much thought? Like, we're kind of what role, if any, have you really thought about, you know, as far as committees and anything that you think is something that's like something that's got to be done during your tenure?
I'm not going in with an expectation of, you know, anything in particular, and I didn't run on false, you know, promises of any kind. However, my platform was agriculture and veteran, so I definitely am looking at those committees. I've talked briefly with Pro Tem Gudger about different things. You know, rural health care is a big thing in my district, so I might want to look at some of those. And that's still, we're still discussing a lot of that. But, you know, my job would be to write bills, debate bills, and vote on bills that will affect the district and the state. So I don't have like a narrative that I'm going after, but as a whole, I sure want to do a good job and be a voice for the people.
Well, rural health care is kind of interesting. Now, you listen to Democrats, they want to expand Medicaid. I just, there's no path for that, and you could be for it, but the reality is the legislature is not going to take money out of the general fund for this. They're just not going to.
Right.
What is the answer there? I mean, how... is there necessarily a state response here? I really talked to Del Marsh a long time ago when he was pro tem. So what we're doing is we're conflating rural hospitals with healthcare, and you got to figure out a way to kind of divorce the two of them and not assume that rural healthcare is just the automatic answer is a hospital at a place that probably can't support a hospital.
Right. Well, I did. I toured Washington County Hospital in Chatham. They have a very nice facility there. You know, I'd like to bring something up, and I've been, you know, bringing this up in conversations with the healthcare side, as along with veterans. I've talked to Kent Davis. I've talked to several people about it. So let's use Washington County for an example. We've got a lot of veterans there in Washington County who are driving to a crowded VA in Mobile, and they're passing by a struggling hospital. Well, can't we help all three entities by, you know, and this may be a federal thing, not so much a state thing, but it starts with conversation. So I would love to see these veterans get some kind of card, a purple card or whatever, where they could stop in that hospital, be seen if the hospital can handle it. And that's another part of the discussion. I've talked to people in healthcare. I haven't got any resistance yet. So it just makes common sense to me. You're helping a veteran because he doesn't have to drive as far. You're helping a VA because it's not so crowded, and you're helping a rural hospital. So it's things like that that I want to put my eye on. It just seems like common sense. Then you get into the red tape of it, and so that's something I'd like to,
you know, certificate of need and
right,
you know, all the bureaucracy. Yeah,
yes, sir.
And getting through that and navigating that, but I mean that is something that is done at the state level. Well, we'll ask you to sort of the elephant in the room, gambling.
Sure.
That was Senator Albritton's thing when he still is. Where do you fall on the gambling question?
Well, to start with, he brought it up as an education lottery. There is no such thing as an education lottery in Alabama. I did not know that when I qualified. I got into the weeds of gambling after that. I got led down a rabbit hole on some things that I was not for the people voting on the lottery. I will never be against people voting. However, people need to be educated when they vote. And right now, the lottery is tied to Class 3 gaming in Alabama, and that includes everything. And I think it's going to be all but impossible to split that out and let people vote on a clean lottery bill because of the money that's involved.
They need the lottery is the engine, and everything else
that's
is
right, exactly
tagging along, right? And this is like thing that's hard to explain is like, okay, you do away with the prohibition on the Constitution by referendum on gambling on games of chance. This is now opens the door for a lottery, but a lot of other things as well. And I don't think people fully grasp that.
I agree. And as a whole, let me say this. I've met with PCI Porch Creek Indians. They're not the devil I'm talking about. I mean, these people are Christian conservative. They just happen to get out of poverty by gaming. But they think a lot like we do. They help our state. They help our local communities. If you want to go gamble, go to Wind Creek. Some of that money comes back to us. This outside gaming that we're talking about, American Conservative Fund was what kept coming up with me, which DraftKings, VanDuel, all that money will not stay in our state. It's almost an additional tax, if you will, in my opinion.
It's very predatory.
It is very.
And I have three boys, and I worry about that. Compulsive behavior, and it's just a little bit here, but they say, it adds up.
Well, scary to think that a kid can be gambling on their phone.
How
do you control that,
And you're robbing them of something if you listen to the show, we go to a lot of sporting events. We got a lot of baseball, a lot of football, a lot of basketball. Once you take that out, the joy, and make it the gambling part of it and sports betting and all of that, there's something that's taken away from that. I don't like it. It is very predatory. If you want to gamble and you earn the money, then so be it. But what I don't really care for is the state of Alabama seal being attached to it.
Right. Well, and look at Mississippi's Gulf Coast. Do we want our beautiful Alabama Gulf Coast to look like that? How do you keep that out when all the money that we're talking about is involved? And the Porch Creek told me up front, I didn't ask the question. They did not plan to have a casino in Foley, Alabama. That was great news to my ears. I don't want a casino in my neighborhood. I don't know who would. Not looking at Mississippi's coast. I mean, the only thing thriving there is pawn shops.
So you're convinced that OWA is not the footprint for a casino someday?
All I can tell you is that's what I was told. I would have argued that point until they told me.
Just drive and you see. It just has that blueprint, right?
Well, I don't know if most people, they brought it up and I remember now, but Blue Collar was what started all that. And they were the financial backing behind it. And then it fell through and they ended up with the property and this is what they've gotten. I wouldn't see them not wanting to have a casino there, but that's what they told me.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they always say, but there's always going to be that suspicion.
I suspect myself. I can't say I don't.
I mean, it just looks like a place that it's major for the thoroughfare on the way to the beach, and you can't help but think that. But
I think there would be a lot of resistance there, so,
Oh, there was, when this was talked about, that this was – Senator Elliott is like, I got to thinking about it, what's to stop a bunch of money-grubbing politicians in North Alabama, and we saw what happened during the BP oil spill,
right?
From saying we're in a cash crunch here, we got to do something, and green-lighting that. Because that's the thing, the dam holding this all back is the Constitution of Alabama of 1901 about games of chance. So, we could vote on it, and that's fine, but just know it's not just a lottery, it's sports betting, it's casino gambling, and even if you don't have it here, it's in other parts of the state, right?
Yeah, how's it working out for Mississippi? I mean, I keep going back to their coast, but I don't see them being top of the line with everything they do. They've got wide open gaming.
And they got homeless problem and just stuff like that going on. I mean, it's a fun place to go, but this is what people need to know, that this is what's going to happen. I guess it's just a matter of educating people.
That's right.
Well, and my listeners are like, well, don't tell me, what I need, what I can and can't do with my money. Okay.
But there's a difference in educating them and letting them vote. I mean, they have the right to vote. I'm there to be their voice.
It's also there, this idea that the state of Alabama, and if you go to any state that has a lottery, you hear the advertising and they're pushing you in this direction. And they want you to buy those lottery tickets.
Right.
They want you to buy those scratch-offs. They want you to buy these things that do have a detrimental effect on society, whether you want to acknowledge it or not.
Well, I love Alabama, but the best comment I heard is I don't think Alabama will get it right. And I mean, you know, that's for more government.
Medical marijuana working out for
us. Yeah, right. You know, and I'm for less government. So, and you know, people don't think about it, but in my opinion, gambling is more government.
Right.
And if it doesn't have the proper oversight, what are we doing?
Yeah. And so, you know, it's just maybe we need there's a trust issue here with the state and the state of Alabama.
And it's politicians as a whole, isn't it? I mean, yeah. Wow.
The system. I mean, it's let us down so many times in the past. Why should we say, okay, we'll trust you this time again?
Right. Well, I sure would like to do my part to change that, but it's tough. And I, you know, COVID sure didn't help that. You know, I think that was the turning point for really people not trusting politicians. I mean, I took a jab because I was told that, you know, that was what we needed
did,
to do.
Yeah.
You know, my parents, who are luckily still with us, they're 85 and 86. I couldn't live with the fact if I was the reason that they got sick and all I had to do was take a shot. But that's all about trust. And we're losing trust with our people.
Well, it's across the board. It's national.
Sure.
It's a loss of trust in institutions.
Yes, sir.
And there's politics involved. But the politics are, they'll tell you one thing and then they'll do something different.
That's right. Well, and I think a lot of times this happens in a closed door meeting where the, you know, elected official is doing what they think's right, but the people never find out about it. You know, I don't know how you fix that. I'm still trying to learn. And when I think I've got this figured out, I need to be out of here because there's too much. You know, there's a lot of
you got to learn.
Things. Yeah.
There's one thing to do. You're going to, you know, all the like sort of theater and the chamber and all this. And then what kind of goes on in the hallways and behind closed doors.
Right.
Or sometimes very different things.
That's
okay,
what I'm
saying. You need to go out and say this, but you need to do this
right.
kind of stuff.
Well, and to get the things done for your district, the good things you want done, you have to have allies in Montgomery. So you can't go up there. Everything's corrupt. Everything's this.
Yeah, you can't be just a bomb thrower, right?
That's right.
You've got to work within the system.
That's right.
You know, there's parts of the system that they're just you're just going to be there and you got to be aware of them.
I'm not talking about go along, get along. That's not what we're saying. But you do have to have allies to get things done. And that's what I want to do. I want to do the best I can for the people who are putting me in this spot, you know?
Well, and I think some of it is this, that it's not necessarily getting things done, but stopping a lot of bad things from happening.
That's what I'm hearing. The you vote. Know? Right.
Like just slowing them down, saying, hey, let's take a beat or two here. Why are we doing this? Why are we? And this is a great example, and it was successful. But like, why did we decide mid session to change the Public Service Commission?
Right.
Who was asking for that?
I don't know. Have a clue.
We didn't talk about this at all in the lead up to the session. Why did we wait till like days after qualifying for the primaries to do this? And as you know, it's just things like that.
And I think from my standpoints, I would have been a no vote on that all day because I'm. There again for less government, but I don't know all the details. I would say the people should always have the chance to vote on those positions though. What's seven going to do that three couldn't?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
don't know.
And they would tell you, well, it's not working now. We have high utility rates. So those three that we need to add more and then throw in a government cabinet appointee or whatever.
Right.
In the mix. So, well, you know, to me, it's like, oh, I don't think that's going to work, but they got it done. And listen, the legislature bequeathed the Public Service Commission to the people way back in the day. It was formerly the Railroad Commission, and it became in the early 20th century the PSC. So they had the power to take it away. So I was thinking that's something that is like, you know, that, well, the power company sees something coming down the road and they're trying to get out of the government affairs game. Maybe that's it.
Right.
So maybe it will be for the better, but it's like you said.
Yeah.
Centralization of power with a government appointee and then expanding the commission. How does that get you to a resolution here?
Well, I think the biggest problem is sneaking these things in. I mean, whether we're talking about solar in Stockton, data centers, what we're talking about right now, you're sneaking things in. Let the people know and give them a voice. I mean, I don't think the solar farms in Stockton's the devil. I know that's not popular, but I've met with Silicon Ranch. It brings a lot of revenue. I could talk in detail about what I learned about it. And that's not popular, but at the same time, I really want to do what's right. It's not always going to be popular. But maybe if people were more educated, they would understand why we're voting the way we're voting.
Well, that gets back to the trusted institutions, right?
Absolutely.
Like, you tell us this is going to be okay, but we've seen this play before.
That's right.
And it wasn't okay. So why should we trust you on this? We're going to fight against this.
Right. And I don't know how to get those. So I'm trying to figure out myself how to be the most transparent I can.
No, just and not that you need advice from Jeff Porras, just like being open-minded about this stuff, right?
That's right.
And I, you want to fight the power. A lot of folks want to just fight, but sometimes this isn't the fight that we need right now.
Right.
And then there's also the unintended consequences. You start cracking down on these guys and you say, no, you can't build your solar farm. What's going to happen to your private property, right?
And you're putting that, and you're pushing out future business. We need in this district.
Because people are going to say, "Well, I don't want a heavy-handed county commission coming and telling me what I can and can't
exactly.
do." So we're going to go somewhere else.
And they will.
Let's get a break in here. We'll pick it up one more segment with Terry Waters on the other side. This is the Jeff Porras Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porras Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Wednesday morning. Text line, once again, 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, hit us up there. Still with us for just a few more minutes, Terry Waters. He is a Republican nominee in SD22. Farming and agriculture and agribusiness, and that's such a big part, especially in your district. But you seem to have some allies, Alpha. They're going to be kind of maybe a guiding light, if you will, during your time, you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, and they are the reason I'm here. They supported me. That was the only PAC that was behind me. And really, that's the way I wanted it. I didn't want a lot of PAC money. I didn't want to be beholden to anybody. But they were a big supporter of mine. And, statewide, we're talking a $77 billion industry in agriculture. Forestry, I believe, is $7 billion of that. And we're losing our farms left and right. And that is something I definitely want to advocate for in any way I can. Very passionate about agriculture.
I mean, it's such a challenging, there's so acts of God and so many variables that you have to deal with. And you just see guys throwing up their hands and walking away from it.
Absolutely. Well, I've said it a few times. It's the only business I know where everything you buy is at retail and everything you sell is at wholesale. And let's just take Baldwin County, for instance. Everybody wants to see these farms. That's why a lot of them moved here. Well, if you're for property rights, and I am, and I hate seeing these farms go away and be subdivisions, but at the same time, I am for property rights. And how do you argue with somebody who their forefathers invested money in that property? That was their retirement to pass down to their children, and now there's no money in row cropping. What do you expect them to do? They can sell for generational wealth. It's not their fault.
Well, it's not. And it's the market, right?
That's
it's the
right.
free market, and that's how this works. But there are some things that I think government policy-wise can be done to make it a little less of a burden for farmers.
I hope so. The only way I see it changing is to make farming profitable again, and I sure don't have the answers to that. And if I did, that would be a lot larger than a statewide thing, but I sure will do what I can on the state level.
I think it's that, and when you replace a farm with a subdivision, well, okay, that's fine, but you also have a burden on the local infrastructure, on the schools, healthcare.
Yes, we do.
All these things, all of a sudden, the growth and the tax base grows, and everybody's excited about that. But you got to, the reason that tax base is growing, you got to have to address these needs.
That's right. Absolutely. And, the farming side of it, if we're not careful, we're going to be relying on other countries for our food. And we already are to a large extent. But there's another scare of mine is farming being monopolized.
All these big companies buying up these little farms.
Corporate farming instead of, back in the day where everybody farmed their own food and they supplied, food for the neighborhood. A lot different now, and it's growing closer and closer to that direction.
But you do see the state, the ag commissioner, and they do try to promote the local.
They do.
They do. I think it's as good a job as possible with
I
that.
I agree. You know, I agree. And the Farmers Federation, you know, all these different groups, the Peanut Association, the Cattlemen's Association, you know, I mean, like, even so small as like last year, we threw sweet grown Alabama peanuts at our Mardi Gras Association, went over real big. But something as small as that, bringing attention. But anything we can do, I mean, people need to really realize what we're up against on that side of it.
Well, Terry, thanks for stopping by. We're going to do this probably regularly as we get on into it. But,
yes, sir.
We do appreciate it.
I would like to thank the people for that voted for me, and I would also, the 52%, I would also tell the 48%, give me a chance. I'd love to represent you.
There you go. Terry Waters, we'll be right back. This is F and Talk 106.5.